Hi, welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the weekly podcast where my guests and I explore what it means and takes to be a kick-ass and kind adult these days. Expect deep, real and raw, as no topic is out of bounds. We want lives and businesses that are profitable, sustainable and fun. We want lives that feel as good on the inside as they perhaps look on the outside. And that means adulting the fuck up. I'm Ebony Allard. I'm an award-winning coach, author, and speaker. And if you're ready to implement, go to n2n365.club. For now, though, let's get on with the show. Hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode. Today's guest is the host of his podcast, Guards of Eden, which is based around sharing the journeys of people who are using their platform and careers to promote positive change in the world. He's sat down with guests from many different walks of life, which range from Joe Wicks, the body coach, all the way through to a reformed former inmate at Felton's young offender, Michael Maisie, who will also be on the podcast. But this week so the sole purpose of Guards of Eden is celebrating good-hearted people by providing a place for their story to live. So my guest today is Luca Olius.
Hey.
I'm really happy that you're here.
Thank you very much. I'm really happy to be here.
I'm going to dive straight in because unlike your leisurely podcast, we have very little time and we're going to squeeze tons in.
Let's do it. I'm very prepared.
What does adulting mean to you?
Adulting means having the ability to live a life that serves a purpose that's not just self-serving.
You thought about that. Thanks.
No problem. That's all right. Yeah, no, I just think there's a lot of people that live their life very just consumed by how they think of how it'll impact them. Mm. And I think to be truly adulting, you need to be living a life that serves something deeper than you.
Okay. And so linking it back to the podcast, your podcast.
Yeah.
Is that why you do Guards of Eden? Like, tell me about how your adulting journey and the podcast are linked together, because I feel like they really are.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, yeah, it does. I've been, as we've spoken about before, I'm a big fan of podcasts and I have been for the longest time.
Mm.
Somewhat funnily enough, I listen to very silly podcasts. I don't really listen to too many very serious ones. Yeah. So to eventually go into what my podcast can be quite serious, as you know, yeah, it is a conscious decision I've made. I'm very aware of having an impact on people through your life, but also having an impact on people through your death. And I'm highly conscious of the limited time we have here on the world. So I wanted to build something that will long live me and it will impact people long after I've, you know, God rest my soul, basically.
Do you know what I love about that? I love that. So for so many of the podcasts I hear, and so in the podcasts I come into interaction with, and, you know, I was saying to you earlier, I get about 20 applications of people who want to come on the podcast every single week. And most of them are copy and paste, and most of them are by the same agent, like representing hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. And they're all people that want to come on to further their business, right? Mm-hmm. And they want to talk specifically about their business or their book. I'm like, that's not really what we do here, right? Like, I don't get me wrong, I want to showcase who you are, and I want my people to be inspired by you. What I love about your podcast is you're not monetizing anything, right? No. Like, it doesn't come with a business right now. It's like you just really do it because you want to share people's stories. And I want to really honor you for that, because so much healing comes both from the interviewee, the person, you know, reliving their story and sharing it and having it witnessed, not just by you as an interviewer, but by everybody listening.
Yeah.
But also by the people listening to the stories going, oh yeah, me too. Oh yeah, me too. Or like, I feel less alone when I'm hearing this story, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Firstly, I really appreciate it. Thank you. I think that I feel like in life, you can't expect to do something that you wouldn't do for free, for money. I just don't. You know, as we've mentioned in the interview, in the introduction, I've spoke to Joe Wicks, and he's had a profound impact on my life as a boss. He's my cousin, but a lot of the stuff he did was for free for so many years, and it didn't come into fruition until later. But I know for a fact he would tell you that there's so much value in the stuff that he does for free.
Mm.
And I just feel like it's disingenuous of me to, you know, I do believe there'll be some point in the future that it will be monetized, but in some way, and I think it'll be more so through merch than it would be through ads. I'd more go down that path because once again, you're still providing value.
Yeah, I mean, I can see so many paths for it, right? But that's the entrepreneur in me. I'm like, you could do it. I want you to do Garden of Eden events. I want you to get speakers to come and talk. We, you know, we could all do mini workshops. Like, there's so much that could be done with it.
And they're the two. They are the two. Of course, you think about ways that it could be monetized. In ways that still align with my integrity and kind of what my beliefs are about it all. And they're the two ways, I think, merchandise and live events.
What have you learned the most from your podcast? I'm going to also ask you, what have you learned from your guests? So it's like actually from the like actual podcasting, what have you learned?
Let me answer them separately because they're great questions individually. From podcasting alone, I would say I've learned to listen way with a higher quality. In life, it's so easy to just listen. The version of listening you really apply is waiting to talk. Whereas podcasting has taught me to really listen. And I think the main ways it's done that is because although that I've showed you how meticulously I plan each interview. Although that I plan it meticulously through my head, how it may go, you can't be helped but be surprised by people's answers. And it can bring a whole different avenue to the platform. So you learn to listen because there may be a nugget that you're more intrigued about and you want to go down that little rabbit hole and go into that section. So I think that's the main thing it's taught me. It's taught me to listen at a higher level more than anything else. And from my guests, I think the main thing I've really learned is that there's interesting stories everywhere. Everywhere. And I've been really fortunate they've started to find me more than I've had to actively look. And I think that's something I'm super grateful for, that they found me along the way. But there's amazing stories everywhere. And if you attack that process of podcasting with a level of intrigue and being able to sacrifice your ego momentarily to do so, knowing that it's not about me, that even though it's my podcast, none of those episodes are about me. And that it's just about presenting their story, that it can, the final product after the work ends up being something really beautiful that I'm super proud of. So yeah, I think they're the two main things I've learned from those individual facets.
How does it feel being on the other side of the mic?
Terrifying. Really nerve-wracking.
Do you know what? It's one of the things I wanted to put you at ease about, but also share with my guests, right? Like, we have had people who come on the podcast who have audiences of hundreds of thousands, who are really happy being on TV and on stages and being seen, and who know their story inside out and back to front. And it wouldn't be in alignment with my values and who I am if we didn't also have people for whom it's the first time they've ever been on a podcast or they've been on the other side of the mic, right?
Yeah.
And it is a really different experience.
Yeah, because there's the air of you're really surrendering control on this side of the mic.
It's really weird that you would say that because I find it. Do you think it's more comfortable this side?
Yeah, 100%. on the hosting side, without question, because you know you're the one that's really steering it as much as the guest is providing the majority of the content in my podcast. I get to ask the following question after the answer. I get to direct it somewhat and just guide it. Whereas on my side, now, there's the guest as the guest of it. Yeah, you're a little bit like you're reactive. And I try to be proactive in as many facets of my life as I can.
I find this really interesting because I actually feel like if you're in the hands of a really good podcaster, it's the most freeing thing in the world because it's not, like, I don't find it reactive and I don't find it like, what's going to happen next? Yeah. I'm like, I feel so held. I'm so in the kind of, if I've got a good podcaster who knows the framework of their show, who knows the questions and the structure, who knows the pacing, like all of those things, then they are operating the masculine side of the polarity that's required for good creation.
Yeah.
And then on the other side is the kind of more feminine of the free flow of just like being in the now and answering those questions. And everybody's process is different. And, you know, it's definitely evolved for me. I remember when I first started being on the side that you are now, like answering the questions, I was worried I wouldn't give a good enough answer. And I was worried I didn't know my story well enough or that I'd stumble over my words. And it just didn't work out like that at all. And now I love both sides equally, but I see them as very different things.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Also, my story, it is quite wild. Like, it's, and I'm a very private person. So, which is ironic, right? Because I seek people out to be vulnerable and be open about their stories. And it's why I'm probably more conscious of how it ends up as the final product. That it's something I'm probably even more emotionally invested in than even if it was my own story. Because I am quite private. So yeah, it is really challenging. And I have a naturally more feminine energy. I've spoken about this recently. I have a very feminine energy, more so than masculine. And so you'd think that I would be more comfortable in this position, but I guess I'm just not. Maybe it's because I have to be more open.
Well, and also I would say that it's the first time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that as well.
And that's it's always going to be uncomfortable, as particularly, like, again, we couldn't have picked more polarizing podcasting styles and formats, right? Like, yours is long form and you're meticulous in your research and you, like, really understand the person that you're working with and, like, you know a lot about them before they arrive.
Yeah.
Like, I work in short form. I have an opener and an ender. What happens in between, like no one knows. And like that really works for me. And like I come in with a curiosity and I don't know where the conversation's going to go. And I can hold space around that. And that feels really cool. But I'm really comfortable doing that. And so it's like, I really love how one of the main tenets I want people to understand around adulting is there's no right way and there's no wrong way.
No. And I've had to learn mine on the fly. I didn't have any idea how to interview someone. I didn't know how many questions. I didn't know how long it was. So that's like been a natural progression. And I think at first it started quite short in terms of it would be under an hour. And then as I got more comfortable, it went longer. As you know, with the Michael Maisie episode, that's the longest one I have, which is about 2 hours and 10 minutes.
It didn't feel that long.
No.
It's because he's got, I mean,
absolutely sensational.
Yeah. You'll hear more from him later.
And I think that I'm starting to find that happy medium once again of being more efficient with my questions. And but it's the really engaging thing about podcasting is being that I've learned every time I've stepped at a mic, which has been so, so valuable. It's meant that I'm starting to find this happy medium. And I think 90 minutes, like an hour to 90 minutes, ends up being the form that it gets to. But the funniest thing about doing meticulous research is that you have to somewhat walk 2 paces behind the person through their own life, especially you, where you've been so open about your platform and the life that you've lived. I almost feel like I'm like 2 paces behind your life. That's kind of how I envision it in my head. And it ends up, you end up forming this really powerful opinion of someone before you ever step to the mic. And it's really interesting to do that. But yeah, it's meant that I've, you know, we spoke about the Sarah Davis interview that I had. I was a bit of a fan. I researched into her. I was a full-on fan when I stepped to the mic for our interview.
Do you know, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this podcast, actually. It's like, when I was 23, I was in Bali and I read a book. No, I was in Thailand, sorry. And I read a book called The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama. And that book changed my life. I mean, there's been lots of books like that. But that one in particular changed my life because I was having a really hard time with my mum, the relationship with my mum at the time. And in it, there's a bit where he asks you to look for the similarities over the differences. And he said he can get on with anybody in the whole world because most people, when they walk into a room, are looking for the differences between them and the other person. And that if you want to be happy and you want to change the world and you want to have a different relationship with everyone that you meet, and you'd be able to get on with them and form connection, start looking for the similarities.
Yeah, it's so true, and
it's what you do, and it's your way in the world. It's what you do, Luca.
Thank you, I appreciate it. It's a conscious decision, because it's not. I think a lot of the time, people look at the way that I approach interviews in that way, and maybe they think it's through just who I am, but it can be quite a conscious decision in terms of the reason I do that research is because I want to be able to tell their story in the best way. But of course, I naturally end up picking questions by accident and that end up being stuff that I relate to, but it's also conscious in the fact that I want to be able to provide value because it is still a conversation, although it is an interview.
Mm.
I'm not a broadcaster where I just ask the question, get out, ask the question, get out. There are parts where, like our conversation, that I do contribute little bits because I still want it to feel conversational, but it is from an interviewee kind of stance.
What I see about your way and what you've created is that because it isn't for a business, and because there isn't an agenda, I mean, there has to be an agenda.
Yeah, right? But...
And so the agenda, as I see it, is that you are getting to meet some really fucking cool people.
Yeah, 100%. Right?
And be in their energy. And like, if you are, I mean, that's how you like hack success, right? If you want to be successful, like hang out with really fucking successful people. So actually, I think you're way smarter than you look. And you are getting to hang out with some really cool people who've come overcome some really gnarly stuff, for want of a better word, right? And found a way to adulting.
Mm.
And I've listened to you throughout all of the interviews that you've done. I say all. I'm just going to caveat that with I actually haven't listened to like 27 hours worth of content.
No, they're longer, right? So.
But you do have a lot in common with a lot of the people, right? Mm. So I don't want to make you uncomfortable.
No.
That's not what this is about. No. I know that one day you will write a book.
Oh, I really hope so. It's a. I've never verbalized it, but it's something I envision happening. I really hope it does.
So if you were able to share like a snippet of kind of where you started, what you went through, and where you are now, what are you willing to share with us?
I'll do my best because obviously I am 27, but there's been a lot. I started at, my mum and dad were super young when they had me. My dad was 20 when I was born. My mum was 24. They were traveling Spain and I was a very big accident. One that they've both spoke fondly of in terms of that time.
Are they still together?
No. So my dad and mum broke up when I was 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been so healthy that it was that age they realized it and they didn't just try to have a, you know, begrudging relationship for years.
And do they still talk? Are they still friendly?
They don't talk, but they're friendly. Okay. I think... I look at them now and I don't understand how they were ever together. Right. They're so different as people.
Yeah.
My mum is by nature quite nervous, quite, I guess, anxious, maybe easily stressed. Mm-hmm. She's also like one of the best women I've ever could care to have raise me.
Yeah.
And she's extremely affectionate and loving. Whereas my dad was just very chilled. He's much more like me personality wise. He's a deep thinker, very deep thinker, which we share in now that I'm an adult. But my dad, I think, saw my mum as someone who was soft, and she wasn't. She was quite disciplined. But my dad was a disciplinarian, so much so that I spent most of my childhood terrified of him.
So your parents split up.
Yeah,
you were 2. But did you live predominantly with your mum?
Yeah,
I mean, it's an assumption because that's what at that you know most.
No. Most but scenarios. But it's true. I live with my mum, my dad. So I'm from Kingston. So well, we born in Epsom, but was raised in Kingston from the age of 2. My mum moved there. And my dad lived in Raynes Park, which is close in that for people that know that area.
So they were in Spain, but they were both on holiday.
Traveling.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So my dad's side of the family, well, my nanny's Irish on that side of the family, but my granddad's Spanish. So, which is where Olius comes from. But they, traveling Spain. They've told the story. I won't bore people with the story, but my dad tells the story in the most phenomenal way of finding out my mum was pregnant. And he actually proposed to my mum, and my mum was like, no. And my dad said, well, I'm never proposing to you again. So just very just how they both are.
It's funny because you paint a beautiful picture of them just in that few words of understanding kind of where you came from, I guess.
Yeah. And then my dad moved to Nottingham when I was about 11, because that was where he was born and raised. I found that really challenging. I did. And because of that.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Did either of them go on to have any more kids or be in new relationships?
Yeah. My dad ended up having my brother we don't have a close relationship, but he's 18.
Okay.
Now. 19. He was 19 in mid-Feb. Mm-hmm. And that is what it is. That came with its own problems. It was a bit messier, I think, that relationship, potentially more so than me and my mum and dad. So that came with a load of different challenges. And I think that my mum went into relationships, but never had kids again. The running joke was because I've loved being an only child in that sense growing up. And my mum used to joke about saying she wanted more kids, and I fucking hated that idea. I really enjoyed being an only child growing up. So
what did you enjoy about being an only child? Because I would have hated it. I absolutely loved having siblings. I loved being the old. I mean, I hated being the oldest. It comes with a lot of challenges and a lot of responsibility, but also I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. See, I had three boy cousins growing up that I was close with, and one's only 3 years younger, one's 7 years older, one's nine years older. Mm. So I had them as, like, I guess, surrogate brothers in a way, but I've always been really comfortable in my own company, and it's something I have to be really conscious of, not only making sure I have time on my own, but also being able to not be isolated to a fault. So
I think that's an introvert thing.
Yeah.
I'm curious, in the context of adulting, did you ever feel like you were a partner to your mum? Because she was young.
Yeah.
So there's not a huge age gap, and she was a single mother. She was anxious.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you had to step up and kind of adult quite early?
In certain sense of the word, yeah, 100%.
Emotionally, like, rather than practically or physically or financially or.
More not financially. I'm terrible financially, and that's why I'm still living with her now. But no, like, I was going to house parties at like 14 on my own, like, and traveling on buses and stuff like that. And I was going to, I was going to school on my own on a bus, like a 30-minute bus at like 11 on my own. My nan on my mum's side really, really was basically like a second parent a lot of my childhood. And she is actually the most caring, and I think her influence on me I'd be doing her a disservice by not saying she was probably one of the biggest impacts on my life, on who I am.
What do you think made you, because I consider you quite an adult man.
Like, okay.
We had the conversation, I mean, particularly for 27, and I don't mean that in a patronising way. You've still got a whole kind of Saturn return to go through and an identity crisis to have and to figure out who you are, right? But you... I've said this a couple of times, like, in season one, we had a lot of women, and on season two, we have a lot more men. And that's a conscious decision, because what I realized was there was a lot of people in my industry saying there are no good men.
Right. Okay.
And I was like, that's not true. That's not my reality. Mm-hmm. Right. There are a lot of good men. I happen to know a lot of them. I have no idea why I'm single, but I know a lot of good men. Right. And you are one of those. Like, I attract really good men, and they are emotionally available, and they're honest, and they're deep thinking, and they're responsible, and they'll show up. Right. I know that's not how you have always been.
Not at all.
So when did that shift? When did you become an adult? When did you go through, like, consciously choosing to be more mature?
I would say it probably came, it came through different really arduous battles I've had psychologically, I think. Having my sexuality questioned from the age of like 13 until as recently as like a couple of years ago has been like, I'm working through it at therapy at the moment. It's actually extremely challenging, but it's forced me to, what that made me at the time as a teenager was incredibly, although that I had close friends, it made me very cautious about being vulnerable with people.
I understand that.
And it's actually impacted my love life in a massive way. It's really dented my confidence in that way. But I think it forced me to, when I got to 23, my stepdad broke up with my mum. Mm. And she, and I love my mum to bits, but she took that really hard. And of course I did. And at the time I was managing a team of four people at work, at the Body Coach. I was like going on lunch breaks crying to then come back to work. And I went through, I made the decision I was going to go to a therapist.
Mm.
And I think that's questioned my, that's forced me to improve my emotional intelligence so much.
Mm.
And it's having someone that's not a part of your life and doesn't really know you,
yeah,
make you confront all these different situations that I've had growing up. It's forced me to become an adult in that sense. I've had to learn how to control emotional, you know, yeah, ups and downs.
Well, okay, so there's, as a coach, I wouldn't be doing my job if, yeah, I didn't pull some language pieces out.
Yeah,
of that.
Course, sure.
So you just said,
yeah,
I was forced to, and they made me look, yeah, at, right. And I don't think they did. I think it's an invitation to look at parts of your life and, yeah, something that you accepted and chose to do, right? Mm. Like, no one forced you to look at the difficult parts of your life.
No.
And I just want to, the only reason I want to flash that, sure, is because I don't want to take away from the uncomfortableness and the difficulty of going through that process, mm, with a therapist. It's hardcore.
Yeah.
And the result on the other side,
mm,
is amazing.
Thank you.
And it, like, there's a depth of character that you have, which, like, is phenomenal for your age. And I, again, like, is phenomenal as a man, full stop. And I'm, it's probably an awfully sexist thing to say.
No, but that's, it's, yeah, it's true though.
It is. Mm. And like, one of the things I always say is that adversity, I have a whole blog called Adversity and, like, oh, what have adversity and broccoli got in common? And it's that they're really good for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, so I'm, you know, I'm really sorry that you were bullied. I'm really sorry, yeah, that we live in a world where someone's sexuality or identity is something that we pull apart, or, yeah, you know, for fun. I that really upsets me.
Yeah, and to clarify very quickly, just to jump in really quickly, what it was that everybody told me growing up that I was gay.
Yeah.
And they always thought I was gay. And, yeah, that's something that, it's me and my dad's relationship, it's been impacted that way. I've had people just question it all my life, being like, you're gay, you're gay, you're gay. And I think it comes in twofold, right? Firstly, it meant that when I looked at love life in a box,
mm,
it just meant I just looked at that as pain, mm, because that was what I associated with the romantic side of my life. And secondly, it's being told that you're something that you're not. So that's where I think that it's become a dual problem. Mm. And that's just to clarify for the listeners, if they're wondering what do I mean by sexuality? Because a lot of people think that sexuality is just that you're gay and that you struggle with coming out of the closet and, mm, what that journey is. But
so for me, it's, yeah, much more around the non-binary nature of gender.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, like, to me, given your heritage, given,
yeah,
the Italian, you're not gay. Like, you, to me,
yeah,
do not come across in that way. And, yeah, and, like, yeah, obviously I didn't know you in that time, but, uh-huh, there's a European flair, which I love,
yeah,
right? And it's a cultural thing, and the, mm, English being so fucking rigid that men have the tiniest box to live in. And it's,
yeah,
really, really unfair,
mm,
to give them such a tiny box to that's safe or acceptable to live in, right?
Yeah, and I think the main thing is that I wasn't interested in girls at like 14, 15. Mm. I was really sporty. I played sport. I played video games. I just was late to that particular party. And I went to an all boys school. So I think that because I wasn't interested in girls, they questioned it all the time.
Mm.
And then I think maybe because I didn't take to it well, they maybe saw it as a sign of that I was hiding something.
Yeah.
But it was more so that, no, that's just not who I am. And you guys are telling me I'm someone that I'm not, which really rubbed me the wrong way. And then you compound that with me not being great with girls when I started to get interested. And it was just so much pain tied in all of it that I felt insignificant. And then what it leads to is that there's an emotional unavailability there when I ended up you know, being somewhat successful with girls. I've never really, you know, I'm very private about my love life, but of course there's been girls along the way that, you know, that it could have been a boyfriend-girlfriend situation. It could have been a more committed relationship. And I've made excuses along the way in terms of being like, no, I'm really busy with work. I don't know how I feel about you. All these sort of bullshitty things, right?
Mm.
But what you end up learning is that being vulnerable is painful, and then you attach that to all of the pain prior.
Yeah.
It's just, it's never felt worth it. And it's something that, yeah, I've brought to a therapist, the therapist I've worked with for like 2 years now.
Mm.
And it's something that we're trying to work through because...
Do you feel like, so to me, I'm seeing a connection, and I don't want to ask a leading question, and I want to check in around this connection.
Yeah, please do.
Your podcast, particularly at the beginning, except for your close friend who you did the first episode with, it's mostly women talking about very vulnerable things.
Yeah.
How has that impacted your ability to be around women in a vulnerable situation? Because it's not you being vulnerable for most of the time, it's them, but you are allowing that vulnerability, holding space for that vulnerability, and that's really powerful.
Yeah, I've been really lucky that I've had lots of amazing women in my life, from my mum and nan, especially at the beginning. And then I had my English teacher was on the podcast. That was someone I really looked up to and admired for 5 years. And then I went to sixth form and there was teachers there that I really enjoyed. I think that I've always found myself in platonic situations with women that's been really rewarding. And it's now meant a lot of my best friends are like married women.
Right.
And it's because I know that there's no romantic like level that it could ever get to.
Yeah.
Which gives me this sense of like, oh, I never have to think about that. And it's also that I've always had this somewhat feminine energy, so it's always matched it. But I think that, yeah, in terms of answering your question more directly, yeah, maybe it has changed my perception of how I could be with a woman, but there's just so much pain there. Like, to this day, it's still not easy. So there's healing every day with it. But
and has being around some of the incredible guys that you've interviewed given you any insight into parts of that as well? Or like, kind of harking back to the thing that I said, it's like when you hang around with successful people, you know, some of that rubs off on you, just the vibration that they're putting out, you know, the tidbits you get in between, like you do this really cool thing of like actually hanging out in person with your guests, right? And so there's all of the other stuff that comes in, you know, in the setting up of the interview and the chat around it and all of that. So I'm just curious whether they've helped you, maybe not even consciously yet, but like access new parts of understanding about how it could be.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, the guys that I've interviewed have been like been amazing, and they've been, and the nicest thing is that the relationship that before the interview, it's really differed from person to person. But I work for my cousins, so Joe and Nikki, and I've watched them become, you know, long-term boyfriend and girlfriend with people. I've watched them become husband and wife in Joe's case. I've watched them both become like fathers, and how they attack that in very different ways in terms of being a dad. But whilst they've always been people that I've looked up to my entire life. And I think that they've always helped, and they're not very masculine men. They're really soft individuals. Like,
this concept. Listen, we could talk about this for such a long time. And I think it's so, so important. And I'm actually going to introduce you to a really good friend of mine who's a podcaster who would be an amazing person for you to be on his show.
Thank you.
For those of you who are going, who is she talking about now? That you will all know John and the Embodied Man podcast.
You were on his, right? Or no, he was on yours.
His episode, trying to work out whether it would have come out yet by the time this one has, but mine, we've done a switch. He's also who I live with in Spain. Because, you know, it's all about connection ultimately. And I think that that's like key to what you're doing and to where you're going, and what you're really understanding is that this journey of getting to know people, following the threads, understanding that each person has a story that is interesting and illuminating for themselves and for other people and for yourself, is just taking you on this journey of connection so that you get to understand more of yourself and more of what it means to be an adult as well.
Yeah, and self-discovery is huge in that process, and it's something I never planned for. But you do. You really learn about yourself, but it also forces you to live a life more, I think. Or it has in my case. Gods of Eden's made me want to live a more evolved life, because you get to, you know, people that find Gods of Eden now, they can listen to the first episode where it's me and my mate drinking Corona and just like being really silly, and you get to go on a journey with me along the way as well, which I really enjoyed.
I love that you share that, because so many people would be like, oh, I need to get rid of that first episode because it's just not as good as the rest. You know, we are at time, I love like that we've been kind of all around the houses and shared all these different things. I think if you could, like for me, when I kind of listen to your story and engage with you, the birth of Gods of Eden came from a place of pain and apathy and kind 100%. Of numbness. And what I see now is someone who's really, truly finding themselves and connection through creativity.
Yeah.
And so if there's someone who is stuck in that place of pain and apathy, not really knowing themselves, feeling that pain and potentially being a bit too scared to go to therapy yet or to access it or to, you know, a lot of people are really scared of what they're going to find.
Yeah.
Would you recommend podcasting?
Absolutely. And podcasting, the beautiful thing about it is that format takes so many different shapes. It can be you and a friend and you just cover topics and then you guys are co-hosts. I think that we're in the age now where resources are endless. I taught myself how to do everything through YouTube and blogs and all different bits and bobs, right? So I just believe there's no excuses not to. It's free with Anchor if you want to go that direction. I use a hosting site, but there isn't any excuses to not do it. I really believe in the value of it. So whatever it looks like, a lot of people can consider it therapeutic, like doing podcasts. I believe it's invaluable and it can really give you a sense of self-worth that you maybe wouldn't get if you just lived.
One of my best friends is also thinking about starting a podcast with her daughter to have some really uncomfortable conversations and record them and then, you know, see where they go from that. And so, yeah, I love the idea of podcasting as therapy.
100%. I look at the Red Table Talks that Jada Pinkett Smith does with their family. And it's like it's the ultimate example of that. And what that's probably given their family is like
ridiculous. And hundreds of thousands of people who are watching it.
Yeah, 100%. So, yeah.
Luca,
yes.
Will you end on an I'm an adult but with me?
Yeah, of course. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I would say that I'm an adult, but I still have to consciously turn off my ego in a lot of situations.
The very fact that you know that it's there to turn it off makes you an adult. In my book. What am I going to go with today? I am an adult. But if I could... So this is really... Yeah. So random. When I was a kid, I used to get told off for chatting. Mm-hmm. Like it was the thing I was kicked out of a classroom for. Like my dad would come to swimming lessons and find me at the side of the pool sitting chatting to the girl next to me. Right, like the clues have been there. And I'm an adult, but if I could just chat all day, I would.
Oh, I love it. I can't believe you've done that 120 odd times now.
Yeah.
Absolute machine.
Yeah.
I'm glad I only have to do it once.
Give me another one.
Okay. I'm an adult, but... I'm an adult, but... I could easily sit around and be unproductive for... If you... as an unlimited amount of time.
I love that, me too. And I think more people should talk about that.
Yeah.
Where can people find you? So Gods of Eden.
Yeah, Gods of Eden. is on everywhere in terms of it's on Apple, it's on Spotify, it's on Anchor. And if it isn't on a platform that you use, please let me know, because I obviously do on my own. So yeah, just tell me and I can make it sure that's a happen. My Instagram is just my name, which is Luca Olias, and that's LucaOlias. And I'm that on everything. LucaOlias.com has my blog, which I'm trying to do once a month. And it also has a couple of archived blogs. So I've spoken about sexuality, I've spoken about depression, I've spoken about a lot of darker stuff on there. So yeah, if you're just intrigued about me a bit more, that's probably the best place to get to know me a bit better.
Fab. Obviously, we'll make everything clickable and easy. And
thank you.
Thank you so much for coming and having this conversation with me.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for rating and reviewing. If you have enjoyed this free content, please take a moment to rate us, to share an episode, to spread the word on social media, or to come find me on Instagram and tell me what you thought. On Instagram, I am @EbonyAllard, and I will see you in the DMs. Bye.